and welcome to Celebrating Cinema, a podcast for the love of cinema. Before you continue listening, make sure to subscribe and leave us a review to help more people find us. I am your host, Sophie, and in today's episode, we'll be discussing a genre that has arguably been in a bit of a hiatus, but that audiences are hoping is making its comeback with recent box office success, Anyone But You. I am talking about the rom-com. To do this with me, I am joined by Kiriko.
Hello.
Tom.
Hello.
And today we have a special guest, friend of the podcast, Laura.
Hello.
And as always, before we jump into the rom-com conversation, I want to ask you what you've all been watching lately, Kiriko.
Well, I was in London last week, and I thought that my visit was the right moment to... I always really enjoy going to cinemas abroad because they're always a much better experience than going to the cinema in the Netherlands, except for going to Lab 111, of course.
I was saying the sentence
and I was like, no, that's not true. but there's the oldest cinema of London that is still existing. It's called Electric Cinema. I don't know if any of you have heard of it, but it's like a Baroque type vibe cinema with really nice chairs and also like sofa beds on the first row and tables with like old antique-ish lamps. And you can order like pimiento de padrón and they bring it to the little table while you're watching the film.
Wow.
It was so good. And there's a bar in the cinema room and you can like order drinks while you're watching, like... It's great. I saw Kinds of Kindness, but that was fine. Also nice. But the watching experience was fabulous.
Yeah, that
and the projectors
very cool.
Run on coal, but there's a lot of tuberculosis there.
All the stuff was below 14 years old. Anyway, yeah. How about you guys?
I recently watched my 2000th film, according to Letterboxd. So I had to make it like a big deal. So I watched the Jim Henson documentary Idea Man by Ron Howard that just came out on Disney Plus. And I just care so much about Jim Henson. I have a Muppet tattoo. He's my guardian angel. And it's just a really beautiful documentary about everything from the start of his career on the Muppets to his death in 1990 and how he was just the most creative, like driven person. And I read a really funny Letterboxd review that said everybody's gangster until Big Bird starts singing at the funeral. Man, man, oh man, it's heartbreaking.
It's not that easy being green, having to spend the day the color of the leaves, when I think it could be nicer being red or yellow or gold or something much more colorful like that.
Sorry, who's Jim Henson?
Oh, Jim Henson is the creator of the...
Oh my God, you have like a world of opportunity.
I'm so happy for you because you get to dive into Jim Henson. He's the creator of the Muppets and then he did Sesame Street. But then later on in the 80s, he started getting a little bit more experimental, returning to his roots. And he did The Dark Crystal and Labyrinth with David Bowie and just a whole bunch of crazy stuff. And those two I also highly recommend.
Oh, look into it. Thank you for that, Brett.
A lot of weird puppets.
Nice.
I saw Maxine, the third part in Ty West's and Mia Goth's X trilogy, if it's called that. I have no idea. And it was funny because I had never seen X or Pearl, so the other two films that are precede this. So I thought that was going to be really strange because the first one is about a group that try to make a triple X erotic movie somewhere in the 70s, and Mia Goth plays this character called Maxine who is there, and they're filming this thing and it becomes a horror movie, yada yada yada. And then Pearl is more like a sequel but all about the character that she's portraying in the film in the first one, and then Maxine is Maxine again, about her being in the 80s, being a porn actress who wants to drift into normal acting. And I thought, I'm not going to get anything out of this. It's amazing. It's super fun. It's a really nice 80s. It feels like an 80s film. Fucking loved it. It's going to come out on July 25th here, and we're screening the other two as well. So you can do what I didn't
brush
do and get
your
the entire.
Maxine-ness.
Yeah.
Sweet. How about you, Sophie?
I rewatched Hamilton because I am forever a musical theater girly at heart. And
even Lin-Manuel Miranda?
No, I hate this man. He's terrible. Oh, I was reading Letterboxd reviews, and so for the people that don't know, Lin-Manuel Miranda plays the lead in Hamilton, and he wrote it himself as well, and it was just such a brave move to have the man with the most grating voice of the entire cast play the lead role. And it's just, I will not say more about this. It was very annoying, but all the other people sing very beautifully and I enjoyed listening to them again.
Nice. I couldn't get through it.
No?
It's too wordy. It's too oh my God.
Yeah,
no, and everyone's like raving about it. So I was like, this has to be, maybe when you're in the, I can imagine when you're in the theater and it's the whole vibe, but it also came out on streaming. And then I was like, cool, let's do it. And just the whole Lin-Manuelness of it all.
Yeah.
It's just a little bit of an overload for me.
Yeah, I get that. It needs to be your thing. And I cannot follow it without subtitles because all these words, it's crazy.
One of my best friends is a really reserved guy and he doesn't like to talk about himself. But when he's really drunk and at my place with another couple of guy friends, the first thing that he starts to do is try to show us video clips of fucking Hamilton.
I love and people like that.
It's horrendous. And he does it. He has done it through the years multiple times. Like, Diep, honestly, listen, we've seen stuff. We don't want to see it again. So we know
shine,
what it is.
Man,
you don't know what Hamilton means to me. Like, oh my God. Okay.
I
here
feel
we
like
go again.
I could be friends with this person, I think. Yeah. I would like that.
Aren't all romantic comedies just the same regurgitated cliche story? I mean, pretty much, but that's why we love them. Boy meets girl. Can't stand each other, but they can't seem to avoid each other. They grow close, but then they have a huge fight. And then one of them realizes their wrongs and pulls off a grand gesture at an airport or outside a window, and they live happily ever after. Rom-coms are like a warm blanket. There's no stress, no endgame battles, no convoluted multiverse theory or plot twists. You'd think in this day and age, when the entire world is overflowing with tension and stress, Hollywood would be busting out rom-coms like there's literally no tomorrow. But for some reason, the genre seems to be dead in a ditch. Are we due for a rom-com renaissance? Is it time? And is that even possible in this day and age? Ask anyone about their favorite rom-com, and we'll get to that a little bit later in the episode, but most people will probably list classics from the late 80s to somewhere in the mid-2000s. From Sleepless in Seattle, Notting Hill, to Bridget Jones, The Holiday, or 10 Things I Hate About You. But after that, I challenge you to name one that we can actually call a modern classic. And it's not like romantic comedies aren't being made. Streaming platforms are dishing out dozens of rom-coms every year, and they've turned the genre into a straight-to-streaming buffet of mostly things that are catered to second-screen watching. And it makes sense. Of course, streaming services could see that people love winding down with a romantic movie, especially rewatching old ones from the comfort of their couch. So they just decided, we're going to make as many as we can for as little budget as we can. And for some reason, there's a contract that Noah Centineo and Vanessa Hudgens have to be in every single one of them. End result, people think rom-coms are bad. Studios don't want to invest in them anymore unless they can sign on for 7 sequels and it can somehow involve one or more Spider-Men. So they don't end up in theaters and die after a week in the Netflix top 10. But there's a clear difference between a Hallmark movie in which a workaholic lady goes to a small town and meets a square-jawed lumberjack who teaches her the meaning of Christmas, and something like When Harry Met Sally.
Sorry.
Thank you. But what makes those movies different?
I just saw that Hallmark movie just...
I was rewatching When Harry Met Sally this week, and it's easy to see why this movie in particular has staying power. It really holds up. Harry and Sally meet, as the title already suggests. Sally is uptight and particular. Harry is brash and cynical. They really can't stand each other, but over the course of several years, they keep running into each other and slowly become really close friends. And yeah, exactly, the story is just as formulaic as a Hallmark movie, but I think it comes down to at least these two things. First of all, the clever banter written by rom-com's patron saint, Nora Ephron. It just makes the relationship believable. Like, of course they would hate each other, and yet of course they would grow to like each other. And second of all, perfect leads. And I'm not talking perfect as in Sydney Sweeney and Glenn Powell in this year's Anyone But You, with their blinding veneers and intimidating abs. I just mean perfect in their relatability. Meg Ryan and Billy Crystal are cute and charismatic, but not unrealistically hot. Which is great, because we want to be able to relate and believe that this could happen to us. That's why we love Tom Hanks or Sandra Bullock, Drew Barrymore, Hugh Grant. I'm not calling them low-key ugly. I'm just saying. I'm just saying they're relying more on charisma than perfection. And that's why a Paul Rudd or even a Seth Rogen works better than a George Clooney in this context. So how do we solve this and remove ourselves from this rut? I don't know, but I think there's hope. The movie Anyone But You, despite being slightly hollow, did great at the box office. And we have ideas, my dudes. The internet has been begging for a rom-com starring Paul Mescal and Ayo Edebiri, which, like, hard retweet on that idea. And that's another thing. With the flop era of rom-com, it has a chance to rise from the ashes as a genre that is less unbearably white and straight. Movies like Crazy Rich Asians or Billy Eichner's Bros might not be all the way there, but they show that we can tell different stories and they can do really well. And if anything, we need rom-coms more than ever. In the age of downloading dating apps and deleting dating apps and then downloading dating apps again, or is that just me? Our eyes are glued to our phones too much to connect with a person at the next table. We're also more reluctant to approach each other because post-Me Too, we've all become more aware of boundaries. And I'm not saying that's a negative development, but surely we're creative enough to come up with stories set in this current climate and make them romantic. Romantic comedies have been a thing since Shakespeare, and I refuse to give up on them. I want to believe that we, as a society, want to believe in love. So here I am, I'm just a girl, standing in front of a bunch of Hollywood studios, asking him to please think of a soppy romantics.
Yay!
Wow.
Hard retweet as well on Paul Mescal and A.O. Edebiri. Oh, I love them.
I need them.
Instead, we're getting the romantic comedy called Gladiator 2, starring Paul Mescal and Pedro Pascal, or Pascal Mescal, Pedro Pascal Bell.
Also hard yes, retweet on that being a rom-com.
There for that, yeah. I actually saw a tweet today saying that Gladiator 2 and Wicked are coming out on the same day.
Yeah, it's Barbenheimer all over again.
Yeah, and they're saying like, oh, that's good. A movie for the girlies then another movie.
Yeah, they asked him like, and Mescal said like, it doesn't really roll off the tongue in any way now, does it?
Gladiated?
Wickelator. Ooh.
Okay, so we're here today to discuss the rise and fall and potential revival of the romantic comedy. So perhaps we can start with what a rom-com is to us.
That's a good question, because I don't know. I thought in preparation of this episode, I thought it was a chick flick. Mm. I thought chick flick and rom-com were the same thing.
I think they have there's a big Venn diagram overlap in them, I think. But I think what makes a rom-com is if you take away the romantic storyline, there's nothing left. So I think something like The Devil Wears Prada certainly has a romantic element to it, and it's a chick flick. But you can take, what's his name, Adrian Grenier with his weird little mouth away. And
his weird little mouth?
He has a weird little mouth.
He does not.
I'm not afraid to say it.
No, yes. And of course, the comedy is also a pretty important part, because otherwise you just have a romance.
Just a rom, not a com.
So to go a bit deeper into that, because I think there are a few sort of like essentials in every rom-com, things that all of the rom-coms have, such as the meet cute. It's a very, very big part of the rom-com.
The what?
The meet cute. The moment that the two lead characters meet each other. It's always in a sort of like happenstance way where they run into each other.
Oh, I dropped my books. Oh,
I took your coffee. That was supposed to be, you know, things like that. It also usually introduces some sort of conflict, because otherwise it's just like, oh, this we're two nice people meeting each other. Let's now get into a relationship. There's always some sort of conflict, like, oh, these are people that normally would never like each other, or there's some social status difference or class difference.
Or a misunderstanding.
Yes.
Or
fun fact about that, Vanity Fair did a research into rom-coms. They made a big list of 79 rom-coms and like researched all different parts of it. 31% of them begins with deception. So this is a big part of the rom-com genre. Mm.
He turns out to be super rich, but
she turns out to be a princess.
Right.
Roman holiday.
Or like a bet. There's always the bet.
Oh, the bet.
Which is my I hate that trope. I fucking hate that. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, like if you get the guy, you'll get to go to prom with me.
Yeah, or like if you take that loser and make him into a dateable person, you know, then
yeah,
it's just so it's you'll, always so mean.
You'll date the ugly bitch.
Yeah,
take her glasses off, take her hair down. Whoa, what?
Yeah,
she's been beautiful all this time.
Gladiator 2.
Okay, so there's the meet cute. There's often a best friend who
is always the only room for diversity in,
yes,
in a romantic comedy.
Yeah, and is usually also a big part of the comedy part.
Mm-hmm.
So I immediately think of Notting Hill. And what's his name again? What's that actor called? What's that actor? Who's
Spike.
Spike, yeah.
That's not the actor's name.
No,
but
yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that goes to show that it's a good character in that film.
I literally saw part of it today. Otherwise, I would not have known.
Spike, yeah.
There's something wrong with this yogurt.
It's not yogurt. It's mayonnaise.
Oh, right. There we are then.
And then I think a really, really big part is the chemistry between the two lead characters, of course. You're looking at me like you're not.
No, I'm learning a lot of things.
So we're asking the question, what necessarily constitutes a romantic comedy? But while making my own little list of things that I thought were romantic comedies, I realized that I am a very sentimental romantic. But
we knew that, Tom.
I started going back to films from the 40s, and then I thought, like, wait a minute, I'm old. No, but also, like, those films used to be called screwball comedies, I think. Like Happen One Night, Sullivan's Travels, Bringing Up Baby, like things like that. Like a lot of Cary Grant, but also like Roman Holiday, as I just mentioned. Like these, were those then romantic movies or were they screwball comedies? Or I'm just wondering, because I also think it's interesting to see then what happens with how romantic comedies change and eventually phase out, is that I think that it's this balance of two things, right? It's romance and comedy. And
correct.
Yeah,
right on the money, Tom.
And with that comment, he left the podcast. And those seem to sort of constantly change through the decades. Sometimes it's more romance, sometimes it's more comedy. And I wonder how that has changed.
I think in the 80s and 90s, they became a little bit more formulaic. It's the boy meets girl. Like if you look at Billy Wilder movies like Some Like It Hot, or if you look at The Apartment, it's a very different story. It doesn't start with boy meets girl. It's like two guys are running from the mob and want to get a job in an all-girl big band.
Yeah.
And then they're on the train. And then so I think what we think of now as a classic rom-com is very much the late 80s to the mid-2000s. Like, these two people don't like each other.
So where then does that kind of begin, would we say? It's somewhere in like late 80s, I think.
Yeah, a lot of people say When Harry Met Sally is kind of the first one and the best one of that genre.
Men and women can't be friends because no man can be friends with a woman that he finds attractive. He always wants to have sex with her.
So you're saying that a man can be friends with a woman he finds unattractive?
No, you pretty much want to nail him, too.
Grape?
No, I don't like to eat between meals.
I'll roll down the window. A faceless guy rips off your clothes, and that's the sex fantasy you've been having since you were 12. Exactly the same.
Well, sometimes I varied it a little.
Which part?
What I'm wearing.
You tell her about other women.
Yeah. Like the other night. I made love to this woman, and it was so incredible. I took her to a place that wasn't human. She actually meowed.
You made a woman meow?
It's also interesting that you say that When Harry Met Sally is the first one, since When Harry Met Sally also very obviously not follows sort of formulaic plot line of them meeting, falling in love with each other, then there's some sort of conflict where they break up, and then they realize they love each other, and there's a chase and a big declaration of love. I mean, some parts of are in there, of course.
I think a lot of parts, but in a different way. I think their conflict is mostly internal. It's not like, oh no, there's a big thing, or they lied, or I have to move away, or my friend told a lie, but it's very much like, oh man, we really hate each other. And then they grow up and they mature and their conflicts are internal. It's like, oh, we really needed to progress to liking each other. And then, yeah, there is the best friends getting in the way a little bit. And
But they also don't start out as lovers. It takes them like more than 10 years, which makes it very different.
Yeah, it's so good.
It is very good. So then maybe we can talk about what our favorite rom-coms are, to see what rom-coms are to us.
Right. I'm still a bit confused on what a rom-com is. I figured it out just now, but I came prepared with my favorite rom-com being Hustlers. But like,
oh, interesting choice.
But okay, because there is a very, I'm going to defend this film being a rom-com, because there's a very strong romantic aspect to the film. However, not necessarily your regular Hallmark love story, boy meets girl, but a girl who becomes obsessed with another girl as a sort of like a role model.
Maybe for the people that don't know this film, can you quickly explain what it's about?
Hustlers is a film about a strip club, about a stripper who has the ambition to become a great stripper. A great stripper like, I forgot her name, but there is one great stripper in this film who's played by Jennifer Lopez. And she gets sort of like mentored by Jennifer Lopez and they become great strippers. Then the economic crash comes and they decide to come up with a sort of like girl gang, rob the boys financial method, where they basically rob and drug men and steal their money and become rich.
So a really interesting thing that I've been thinking about, and it's really fun that you mentioned this, because I really feel like post the rom-com height of the mid-2000s, I feel like there was a twist to, we started focusing way more on like empowerment and stories of friendship as opposed to boy meets girl, which I think was very welcome and a very welcome change. But I think the focus on that over boy meets girl brought forth all of these movies, and are they rom-coms?
Yeah.
Maybe, but
I would say so. Like, they give the same sense of fulfillment to me, or at least the reason why I go back to a rom-com that I've already seen maybe 17 times is the fact that I want to feel hopeful in some way or another. And Hustlers does that for me as well.
You want to be a stripper? You want to be a scamming stripper?
I don't know. It's funny whilst being like this, I don't know, sense of glamour that you're not really supposed to like, but you fucking love or something, which rom-coms have as well. And I would say along these lines, Bridesmaids is also a film that I would more consider, like, I would say people would consider it a rom-com.
Hey, buddy. Hey. How you doing?
I'm good. I'm so much more relaxed. Thank you, Helen. I just feel like I'm excited and I feel relaxed and I'm ready to party with the best of them. And I'm gonna go down to the river.
Wow, it looks like somebody's really relaxing now.
Yeah, wow.
What are you guys talking about up here?
We are.
However, it follows not so much the idea of a woman falling in love with a man, but a woman supporting her best friend with like a man on the side. And I think, yeah, I think there has never been a fall of the rom-com. However, it has evolved into, yeah.
More stories about friendship. Yeah. Like even in Disney movies, you see this with like Frozen, which is about two sisters and not about a prince saving a girl. So I really feel like that is something that society decided we needed, and we really did.
Yeah. That then brings us to a question of, do rom-coms reflect how we look at romance at that point in time when they are made? And does the romance change with it then? I mean, if it is a reflection, then I would say yes.
I do think that in the 80s, romance was very different. Mm-hmm. Tom and I talk about this a lot in regards to like Seinfeld, for example. Like at least like 70% of Seinfeld episodes couldn't happen in this day and age because you just shoot someone a text. And so I do think the idea of romance has changed, where you could just like run into someone on the street or da, da, da. And now our idea of romance has changed so much because we have dating apps. And I swear to God, if I see one more of those ugly graphics of like text messages coming in on screen, I will throw hands. but that's what it is now.
Wait, maybe I shouldn't use the word romance, but maybe I should use the word love, because then it applies more also to these films that you're mentioning, because our idea of what is important in love is changing. It's not only your romantic partner, but also your friends, family are getting much more foregrounded.
Mortgage.
Gladiators.
The mortgage of the Colosseum.
I love how you're just like throwing in like ad-libs throughout the episode, like gladiators.
Maybe you should tell us now what your favorite rom-coms are.
Oh God, that's a good question. Yeah, no, my favorite rom-com ever is When Harry Met Sally, because it is one of my favorite films of all time. I think it's in my top 10 films of all time.
Wow,
I love that film.
Really, wow.
I think it says so much about relationships in every phase of your life. At least mine. I can only talk about my own life. About how in sort of different circumstances, if you're with somebody or you're alone or you're with a friend or you're with a partner that you've been for a long time, it says so much about all these phases in relationship life. And it just comes down to that the director, Rob Reiner, came out of a divorce, then met up with Nora Ephron, and they decided, we're going to write a screenplay together which covers both our bases, like everything that I have come run into as a man in relationship to a woman and everything as a woman running into something with a man. And I think a lot of shit is very dated in that film, but a lot of other stuff is very sort of still very universally well handled in a very beautiful way. And yeah, and I agree what you said about what's so nice about When Harry Met Sally is that Harry and Sally are very likable characters, but they're not these Affleck and Jennifer Lopez in Forces of Nature. or was it Force of Nature? Whatever the fuck that movie was called. No, exactly. So, yeah, I love it. I think that's it. And the other one so I was looking up sort of other ones, things that from the 90s but don't fit that specific bill, as in the sort of blueprint of how a romantic comedy in the 90s works. And then I thought, like, yeah, Groundhog Day in a way is a romantic comedy, even though no room for Andy McDowell to have any character in that film.
What are you looking for? Who is your perfect guy?
Well, first of all, he's too humble to know he's perfect.
That's me.
He's intelligent, supportive, funny.
Intelligent, supportive, funny. Me, me, me.
He's romantic and courageous.
Me also.
He's got a good body, but he doesn't have to look in the mirror every 2 minutes.
I have a great body, and sometimes I go months without looking.
I think you're totally right. I think that whole movie it follows the rules we just decided. Like, if you take away the romance, there's nothing left. Yeah. Like, if you take away the romance from that movie, there's no point to it.
There's just an asshole trying to find himself.
I thought it was really
funny because I suddenly popped up in a list on IMDb that said rom-coms guys might like. And I was like, yeah, you mean that movie about an asshole being an asshole for 2 hours, straight?
Sure, everyone can.
Trying to constantly kiss a woman that's not into him. Then on the next day, which is the same day that he's always been in, try to do the fucking same thing again with everything that he'd learned from the day before. Oh, that's a rom-com that a guy might like. I was like, what the fuck?
Really interesting, because we posted on the lab Instagram and on my own Instagram a question box for people to tell us their favorite rom-coms, and someone said Groundhog Day, and I am now wondering if that was a man or not. I'm gonna look it up.
Or Mr. and Mrs. Smith. That's a dude rom-com for
Does it have guns? I'm there.
I think the entire Judd Apatow, everything starting from Knocked Up, everything starting from The 40-Year-Old Virgin is a sort of specific noughties bracket of, is it a romantic comedy or is it a comedy with romance? Because at some points, specifically like something like Superbad, it starts changing into, okay, because we were talking about like Hustlers or like Bridesmaids being more like about female-centric friendships, but with romance somewhere along the line. Superbad is the same thing, like nerdy boys in high school, but then with also love interest. I don't know where this train of thought was going.
It's definitely a love story.
Yeah.
Between these two guys, like a friend. Like, I think friend love is just as important as romantic love.
But they do not give us the same satisfaction, right?
Like, Superbad gives me all the satisfaction.
Oh, yeah. Love that movie. Yeah, Michael Cera and literally anything is my fave. Anyway, it was not a man, if you were wondering about Groundhog Day.
It's a win for feminism.
Baby steps.
I wrote down as my favorite, and I have so many favorites and they're all for different moods, but I grew up in a time when Notting Hill was just the one.
A very ordinary boy bumps into a girl and takes her home.
The bathroom's on the top floor.
It happens all the time. But she is no ordinary girl. She is Anna Scott, the most famous film star in the world. And when they get together, everyone has something to say.
Anna Scott, Anna Scott.
Anna Scott. Hello, Anna. Scott.
Hi, guys. Oh, Jesus, fuck.
They always do that when I leave a house.
This is a peculiarly strange person to have got involved with.
It's not Fergie, is it?
You must be Spike.
Thank you, God.
I don't want to interfere on anything, but she's in your house.
Yes.
Well, isn't this perhaps a nice opportunity to...
Julia Roberts is just magical, and Hugh Grant is just magical, and that whole story is just a fairy tale of, like, she's really famous, and he's just a guy, and it has so many, like, good lines and little jokes, and I just think that's a very charming movie.
Horse and Hound, baby. Shout out to Horse and Hound and the Reed. I hope the readers of Horse and Hound are listening to this podcast right now.
Any horses in that one? Or hounds, for that matter. Our readers are equally intrigued by both species.
I hope so, too. I hope you're having a great time. There's no horses or hounds, but, you know. And another thing I wrote down
Deep
is...
Guts.
The Judd Apatow class of the mid-2000s, but then also in particular, I think my favorite one of that era is Forgetting Sarah Marshall.
You shall not pass!
I love that movie.
Yeah, it's a very good movie.
It's so cute.
That was also on the list of rom-coms guys might like.
Hey, it has a penis in it.
Yeah. It has a naked, and it has Muppets in it, by the way. Now I realize how this works. It's Henson all over again.
Yeah, it does have Muppets in it. I'll fess up. Any romantic comedies starring Muppets? No, I really like that movie also because I think Jason Segel is a very charming lead. He's like super relatable and a bit of a loser. And I think it's great. I think it's
he's also in with Paul Rudd. P.S. I Love You, Man.
I Love You, Man.
That's, oh, just I Love You, Man.
Yeah, it's called it's I Love not, You, Man.
What is called P.S. I Love You? That's another thing.
That's a very serious like, drama.
Yeah. I Love You, Man was also mentioned in the fave rom-coms.
I love fucking, that
on Instagram.
Slap in the bass.
Slap in the bass, yeah. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I slap the bass big time.
What is that? You sound like a leprechaun.
No, that's that? A reggae guy. I just did reggae. Doesn't sound reggae?
No.
Slap the bass.
No. God, we've been... All these movies constantly come back in reference in our friend group. This is horrendous.
Horrendous. Yeah.
Horrendous.
Okay.
What about you, Sophie? What's your fave?
I had a really hard time with this. Really hard time. I found out that I'm much more cynical than I thought I was. I've been watching some rom-coms lately, and I've just felt like this sort of like
not with your dad again, right?
No, not with my dad. But
these people are in love, but they should die.
Then I found out that if my dad is not around, I will take on this role myself.
Oh my God.
And that's how it works.
I don't want necessarily people to die, but I found out that I'm just this cynical witch that'll scream to the screen like, ugh, sure, come on. I tried to think of films that I do really like that are in the romance genre, and they're all just diehard dramas where one of the lead characters dies and they never end up together. And
so it's movies where you're not either you or your father are wishing that these people would die. They literally die. They are really dying.
Yeah, you're like, that hits the spot right there. I love this.
Yeah, my favorite film of all time, which is a romance, is Moulin Rouge, which is just so dramatic.
Wow.
And especially the ending, spoiler alert, if you haven't seen it yet, she dies.
Sophie loves death.
Yeah.
Sophie and I had a really funny moment right before we were just like here today. And I was watching the trailer for the new movie called We Live in Time, which is Andrew Garfield and Florence Pugh. It's coming out later this year. And it was kind of like in the pre-production marketed as a bit of a rom-com. So I was like, cool, this is going to be so interesting to watch. And the trailer starts rom-com-y. And then at some point, they shave her head. And I'm just watching. It's like, oh, gosh, she gets cancer. No. And then your ears are peaked. She's like, ooh, hello.
Now, if only they would also go to the Anne Frank's house. That would everything would be combined. What was that movie called again? The Fault in Our Stars. Yeah.
Right.
Anyway,
Sophie's a normal person. She's very likable.
I thought you were going to say that right before we went in here, you noticed that I have a necklace that says sad.
It does. Which is really cute.
Really fits in with all the things we just said. I am also happy sometimes. I like to watch happy people.
She embodies the sad
I don't
lifestyle.
Want them all to die. I think if I would have to choose a favorite romantic comedy, it's She's the Man.
Viola was facing a fate worse than death.
Ta-da! Sorry, Mom. I have a strict no ruffles policy.
Until her twin brother, Sebastian.
Where are you going?
London for a couple of weeks.
What are you going to do about school?
I was kind of hoping you could help me with that.
Showed her a way out.
Could you just, like,
pretend to be me? You want me to turn you into your brother?
Nobody in Illyria has even met Sebastian. They wouldn't know the difference.
Now, she's headed to Illyria Academy.
Let's go kick cow!
Where the men have game and the women have attitude.
Hey there, pretty lady.
Ew, girls with butts like mine do not talk to boys with faces like yours.
Wow, that's nice.
Yes, I am younger than you are, and I am like square in the beginning 2000s bracket. All the films then, She's the Man.
Like,
give
Bynes,
me anything
right?
with Amanda Bynes or Hilary Duff in it and some high school drama. And yeah, I'll eat that up.
Lizzie McGuire movie. Amazing.
Yeah. I thought that A Cinderella Story would be my favorite. I don't know if you guys know that one. But then I saw somewhere someone cross it out as a romantic comedy. Then I also got confused in what a romantic comedy is. Because this would be it for me, but I guess it's different to everyone. You do what you want.
Can we talk about Sex and the City? Because
yes, please.
Because I feel like that is a very important topic to talk about when we talk about romantic comedies. And I feel like that is also the shift from this 90s Hallmark trope from then Sex and the City for many years sort of debunking what romance is.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And then after that, I feel like the romantic comedy trope was just not able to be the same as it was before.
Can't be as naive and kind of...
Exactly. Yeah.
Oh my God, Sex and the City killed romance.
It did, yeah.
Actually, it kind of did.
I think it did.
Feminism killed romance. Headline.
Or did it just kill idealized romance?
Yeah.
And showed the actual complexities of it all.
But isn't romance... in a sense, always a bit naive and
it's something we want to believe in, but I don't think any of us have ever experienced it in real life.
It's like a really, Oh, candles near the bathtub? Wow. Well,
bold move.
You went out of your way. But no Gladiator 2, huh?
I mean, I think I'm rewatching Sex and the City currently, and my God, Carrie is so fucking annoying.
She's horrible.
She's a horrible person. But in one way, it's kind of interesting that she's the protagonist because she's a horrible person to all these men. She's a horrible person to her friends. Like, it really triggers me watching this and being like, why are you so mean? It's very different from romantic comedies, but it's definitely something we respond to, seeing someone like that on screen. So maybe then having Reese Witherspoon and someone be like super soppy and romantic just doesn't do it for us anymore. We want to see someone who's a little fucked up.
Yeah, but and the thing about Sex and the City is that everything goes down, but in every episode, she still believes in love. Like, that's the whole thing why she goes on, or that's the only thing that, like, gets her up in the morning.
Yeah.
And does she get it in the end? Yeah, she does. She does get it in the end, though. Sorry.
Sophie, you'll love this.
I think I need to go watch this. Okay, so then instead of rom-coms having a fall, did they just change to a different format? Did they change to series instead of films, maybe? Because Sex and the City is a series, right?
It was also in the mid-90s, but
yeah.
I do think it's changed a lot because of the focus on different subjects. Maybe we let's just put a bow on it. It's like, cool, we have about 100 movies now that are about boy meets girl. Girl drops her papers. Oh my God. Fight. Airport. And then maybe it was like, hey, maybe we need to focus now on something else. And then we can just rewatch those endlessly on Netflix. But I do, maybe we should ask, have we seen any good ones recently that we did respond to, that we did like recent ones from the last like 5-10 years?
There's one that I haven't seen, but I've seen a lot of people talk about it, and someone also commented this on the Instagram post. It's called Rye Lane. It came out last year.
Gonna meet my ex for the first time since the breakup.
And you're still calling it the breakup.
I thought we were fine. We were better than fine. We moved in together. We had Hamilton tickets.
It's a serious commitment.
So what happened?
She cheated on me with my best friend.
You cheated on Tom? With him?
Oh, that hurts a little bit.
I mean, I get it. The arms are nice, but
why'd she even talk about it?
Are you just going to sit there and say that to me?
Well, she said my arms are nice.
I went through the same sort of thing not too long ago.
She was his life coach. Apparently, she opened his mind.
I mean, her legs.
All of her underwear looks like this. Seriously, you'd have to sew like 15 of these together to get the pants I'm wearing right now.
The worst part, I left my favorite record at his place.
Let's go find a record shop right now and I'll buy you a new copy.
But I don't want a new copy. I want my copy. He must have changed the locks. Fuck, I'm gonna break in.
Someone must have a key for Jules' gaff.
I'll keep them chatting. You look for the key.
Room for one more?
What the hell do you think you're doing?
No, I wasn't,
Denise!
Yes,
I just caught this boy going through your knicker drawer.
What have you done?
It looks really cool. It's like kind of experimental in a way.
Yeah, and it's, I think, a really big thing is as well that it stars black actors, not white actors. And I think there's a really big change in that film as well, that at a certain point, rom-coms, it seemed like they just wanted to tie really, really big actors to it and then just sort of cash in on the fact that that was going to bring people in instead of choose people that will actually have chemistry, write an actually good script. And here they went back to just actors that aren't known yet and that are probably right for the role. And
that's how all the actors that I just listed in my monologue, that's how they all got their start. Like yeah. Sandra Bullock, Tom Hanks, like they all started as nobodies in rom-coms. So I really think we need to breed a new generation of romantic leads that aren't Noah Centineo or Vanessa Hudgens, by the way, thank you. but yeah, I think there's some reasonable ones coming out. One that I liked from a couple of years was Long Shot with Seth Rogen and Charlize Theron. I thought that was quite charming.
Oh yeah, I really like that one. Where
she's like on a political campaign or something.
And he's fan of Boyz II Men, right? That's the is that the thing?
I think so. It wasn't very memorable, as you can tell, but that was one where I was like, oh, okay.
I've seen
also
it too.
Really funny.
I remember zero plot.
Zero, but I remember thinking I liked it. So that's okay. Maybe sometimes that's enough.
Sure.
And then there's one that I really like, seeing as we have now decided that Groundhog Day is a rom-com. There was one a couple years ago called Palm Springs.
Yeah,
with Andy Samberg and Kristen Milioti, which I really liked.
Yeah.
I like that one too. I think the most recent one that I remember watching was the, what's it called? Upgraded, about two people that meet each other in a plane. It starts with deception. One of the two tells the other that she's like the executive director of some company while she's actually very poor and like an assistant, whatever.
Bullshitting for shits and gigs. I love it.
Yeah, exactly. And what...
and he's a hijacker.
What really struck me is that at the ending of the film, there was not a chase scene in the airport. And I was so annoyed by that because I was like, this is the cliche in every rom-com. This is the film to do it in because it's about a plane and whatever. And they're not doing it. And I was so annoyed by that.
Also, that's interesting. So we actually do want the cliche.
Yeah.
Hell yeah.
That's why I was surprised.
We're eating it up. We crave it.
Unless it's licorice pizza.
What about it, Tom?
Oh my God.
Is it because they're minors?
Isn't that a rom? Is that a rom-com?
No.
Okay.
I don't know. It feels in its tone.
Well, I mean, if we're losing the literal thing of what a rom-com is with all the cliches and shit, then maybe it's starting to become something else where it's the romance is.
Yeah,
in another conduit, and the comedy is sometimes in another conduit. Mm. I don't know.
Yeah, that's actually.
I mean, licorice pizza clearly is more like, and I'm harking back to what I started talking about all the way in the beginning, is more screwball comedy, but it's also incredibly romantic.
Yeah.
So that's not a rom-com because it can only be the cliche thing when it's a rom-com. Like, what do we want here?
It follows our rule. It follows the rule of if you take out the romantic storyline, there's nothing left. So I guess it's a rom-com.
Oh, call PTA.
By law, yes, it would be a rom-com. However.
There's one thing that we haven't mentioned yet. That's the death of the mid-budget film and how that definitely has affected...
I mean, I was thinking of putting this in my monologue, but I already did that whole capitalism spiel last time. But I will gladly get back on that horse because, it's the event movie is the thing. And Barbie's not a rom-com necessarily. Oppenheimer's not a rom-com. And it just doesn't bring enough asses to seats is what my guess is for all these big studios. So that's why it goes to streaming because you can just make them. You don't have to risk them going to theaters and bombing, like Ticket to Paradise, for example, where they got Julia Roberts and George Clooney.
Oh, yeah. I forgot about that.
Let's bring out the big guns. Let's get Clooney and Roberts, because apparently that's what we need.
Yeah.
No one gave a shit. Like, no one did. So then they took a big risk, did it wrong. And then they're like, oh, well, apparently this doesn't work, so let's get another Iron Man movie. It's apparently what people want.
It doesn't seem like...
Gladiator 2.
Like the $20 million movie never, like the thrillers have died, the comedies have died, like all these very specific genre things just don't get made in that, well, I mean, that entire bracket doesn't necessarily get made anymore, but there's something below big budget movies, but it's not the mid-tier shit that we used to have. Mm. It's like these, like Alonthimos film, or for instance, that's what's now in the Fox Searchlight bracket of what could be made, but not really necessarily, for instance, I don't see Alonthimos making a comedy.
I think this is also in our heads a little bit because I'm just going to the release list right now, what's out this week. Fly Me to the Moon, starring Scarlett Johansson and Channing Tatum, which is, in my prediction, going to flop because no one's talking about it. So I think they are getting made. I just don't think we're doing it right. And then also something like The Bike Riders, which isn't a rom-com, but is kind of a mid-budget movie. I just don't think the mid-horizon, you know?
That's not mid-budget.
Isn't it?
No. It's like he spent 200 of his own million.
Yeah, I guess he did. To be a little cowboy.
So why do we not care?
Yeah. Maybe because the studios don't care. They just shit him out and they just go, here's your stupid thing that you want. Eat it up. And then we're like, well, we're going to do like that. And I don't want it.
But who said they do like that? Like, there's a reason why I'm not going to go see Fly Me to the Moon. It's because I don't care. Mm-hmm. I think the people who made it.
Yeah, so but then it would be it would be a cultural thing that we're not necessarily interested in romantic comedies anymore. And that's why they're not being made.
Yeah, but I do care. I just don't care about the new ones. So maybe it has to do something with I wanna be in love with like this 90s idea of what romance was. However, making that today will be weird because then you get this Sydney Sweeney crap and it looks off.
Yeah.
So therefore, I can only watch the old shit. Is that what it is?
I think you have a really good point. And I think also, again, okay, so now we have Scarlett Johansson and Channing Tatum. They're too hot. Come on. Come on.
Yeah.
And maybe we don't want A-listers and these things because we can't relate to them.
Yeah. And also, I think it's the only genre that at least I allow to watch over and over again. Like, there is a few rom-coms that I think they're the films that I've seen the most in my life because I go to them when I feel sad or something. So there is no need for new ones because it gives me the same satisfaction every single time.
Yeah.
That is not the case with other genres, I would say. I think only rom-com lends itself to stay the same, not go with the times.
Always be 90 minutes.
And it's better when it's predictable and therefore it can be watched 100 times.
Yeah, I agree.
I do still think that is not gone, but that it has maybe moved to series because I think there's a lot of rom-com series, like for example, Jane the Virgin, which are super, super popular, but just give much more space to the complexities of modern day dating instead of this really idealized, naive 90-minute arc.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of series that are clearly very romantic, like Bridgerton's clearly doing very well. People are longing for romance, guys. It's never going to go away. But maybe it just lives on streaming now, but I think that'd be sad.
Yeah.
Yeah, I have also like no idea what's going on streaming. I don't have any of the... I feel like it's a whole different world.
It is. Absolutely. From the cinemas, you mean?
Yeah.
Yeah, it is.
Okay, good.
All right.
So, we've probably created more questions than answers now. Has there been a fall? Has there been a revival? Not sure.
And then will there be
a revival? But will there be a revival? And how do we see that? I think you had a very fun question to end this with.
Yeah, it's like, okay, so we've all decided that it's not what we want it to be right now, but what do we want it to be? Like, who is going to make the next great romantic comedy? That could be either a director, a writer, or actors. In my monologue, I already mentioned Ayoade Debary, who I think is magical as a person.
Yes.
And I think she can do anything she wants.
100%.
She directed one of the episodes of The Bear. I think she should direct, write, star, write the theme song. Whatever she wants, let her cook. And I think Rachel Sennett is also very talented, and I want to see her in more things. And I was also thinking, like, I'm a huge fan of Gilmore Girls, and where has Amy Sherman-Palladino been? I think she's one of the best writers for romance, comedy, flawed characters, fun characters. Mm. She's only been doing TV. Why hasn't she done a movie? I'd love to see it.
I said it before and I'm going to say it again. I don't necessarily need a new rom-com because I'm fine with the rom-coms that I have already. However, I think it would have to be someone who is not necessarily very off the rom-com genre, because otherwise it would turn into something else, and then you'd get like Marriage Story, or, you know, like, it doesn't need to destroy it. It needs to complement what it was already. God, who's funny? I don't know. Because they'd have to be funny, and like, who's funny?
Sorry. There's no funny people left.
Can it also be dead people?
Hey, girl, sure. With the technology in a few years, hey, who knows?
If it's up to Sophie's dad, I mean, it's fine by him.
Swiss Army Man.
If she would have still Swiss been Army a... Man. Oh my God.
Farts are funny.
Everything I'm going to say now is going to be silly.
No, come on.
We love silly.
Okay, so I think what would be really nice is if Agnes Varda would make a rom-com. Because she's nice and she's funny and romantic.
Yeah. Get her back.
Right. It makes me also kind of makes me sad because her husband used to make funny, yeah, cute rom-coms.
Yeah, but yeah. True. So then
That, yeah, it would be like a homage to her dead husband.
Those were actually really nice rom-coms, yeah. Indeed. Yeah.
So let's move to Sophie so she can say another thing about death, and then we'll end on a positive note with John.
I have zero clue. My first choice would also be A.O. Debris.
She's a star.
Yeah,
she's
sorry,
gonna do it
I'm
all.
Completely blanking. I don't need more rom-coms in my life. I need more death. No. I don't know. I really don't know. It's a really hard question.
Tom, do you have any ideas? I'm sure you do.
Well, the when Barbie came up just now, I thought like, so the model of two people who may or may not be in a relationship writing something together from both perspectives, kind of what Baumbach and Gerwig did with Barbie, would be, for me at least, a very interesting basis for a romantic comedy.
Yeah.
But then you get Marriage Story.
Yeah, but no, Marriage Story. What? How are you mentioning Marriage Story?
I don't know, because I was like, what's
up, drama about divorce? I want the part before the Marriage Story nastiness.
Yeah, but that's what we're saying. Like, it's over. Like, it's,
yeah, but they
what
could,
comes
like,
after rom-com
bring the
divorce?
Fun of, bring the
because that's the whole thing with the rom-com. Like, they get together and then the movie ends. You know, so
you just mentioned a dead person directing a film. How am I not allowed to this opinion? At least my people are still alive. I hope. You don't know when this podcast is coming out. I haven't seen Anora by Sean Baker. And what I've heard about it is that it could be like this sort of licorice pizza kind of romance, hectic story. Might not be the classic cliched rom-com thing, but I'm having good hopes for that.
That and the Agnes Varda directed film with Paul Mescal and A.O. Debris in the lead.
Gladiator 2.
Where they both die at the end.
That's going to be the third one, yeah.
It's a perfect rom-com, apparently.
Enjoyed this episode and want to hear Laura talk some more? Go back to listen to our episode titled Where Has All the Sex in Cinema Gone? In which we invited Laura to speak with us to talk about the significance of sex in film. Want to keep the genre investigation going? You can listen to our episode on film noir, Tales from Nightmare Alley, in which we question whether you can even call film noir a genre. If you enjoyed this episode, please leave a review and share so more people can find us. Make sure to subscribe and stay up to date with all new releases. For any questions, feedback, or requests, contact us at celebratingcinema@lab111.nl and follow us at Lab111 on Instagram. As always, we provide show notes, including all films mentioned, at celebratingcinema.com. This was a Lab 111 production, edited and produced by Elliot Bloom, with music from Hugo Emmerzaal and artwork by Studio FFF.